it's a nice comparison between training the muscles of our body to become more powerful, more resilient in pushing up a certain weight. Well, the same goes for our brain. It is in a way a muscle that we can train for new behavior. And there the intention is the most important thing. I no longer want to take things personally because I want to become more free. And so the end result, even when I know that sometimes I will fail, I'm learning to become more free and less dependent on how other people treat me.
The big question is this. In a world of fake Instagram models and fad diets, how do real people achieve their fitness goals? We are an army of hardworking women changing their lives through fitness and health. Wherever you are at on your journey, we have the answers to how to make working out and eating well a part of your life. Join us in changing the dialogue for women everywhere. Welcome to the Thick Thighs Save Lives podcast.
Our guest today, Frederick Imbo, is an expert in communication and neurolinguistic programming and delivered the very popular TED Talk, How to Not Take Things Personally, with over 17 million views in the top 50 globally most watched TED Talks ever.
He has a master's in neurolinguistic programming, a master's in transpersonal coaching and counseling, and he gives talks all over the world, stimulating and guiding individuals to develop their communication skills. He is the expert on how to not take things personally. So if you struggle in this area, you are going to love this episode. Enjoy.
Hey guys, and welcome back to the Thick Thighs Save Lives podcast. I'm Kelsey.
And I'm Rachel. Guys, we have an incredible guest for you today. Frederick Imbo is with us. He is an expert in communication and neurolinguistic programming, which we're going to talk to you a little bit more about. But basically, if you want to interact well and better with others, Frederick is your man. He has one of the most popular TED Talks worldwide, and he has made quite a name for himself as a keynote speaker, helping people to communicate better and take things less personally. So, Frederick, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, girls. Hello, everyone. Hi, Rachel. Hi, Kelty.
I think all of us could benefit from taking things less personally. So I'm really excited to talk about this topic and let our listeners hear more from you. But why do you think so many people identify with the topic and try to seek out the information to take things less personally?
I think we all social beings. We need the confirmation, the recognition of other people. We want to feel welcome. We want to feel valuable. And from the moment somebody is doing something or not doing something, thanking us for an email, a text message, reaching out to us, it's like we feel suddenly like a bit disbalanced and missing that kind of support, that framework that we are valuable. So therefore, we are easily taking things personally.
Yeah, I've probably never spoken to a single person that if you ask the question, do you wish you took things less personally? They said like, no, I'm good. I'm doing well there.
It's true. Everyone suffers from that. And to me, this is a really, I'm curious to hear from you, Rachel, how the rest of the conversation went. If you could talk about this with people, because to me, this is one of the things that would bring and connect people closer together. From the moment I admit and I take my responsibility upon the fact that, this morning I crossed you in the hallway and you didn't really say hello to me. I took it a bit personally. Maybe it's because I have not got a good sleep, or I don't know. Maybe I'm still not sure whether you have forgiven me the last quarrel or fight we had last week. But please, Kelty, tell me. Yeah, how was it for you not saying hello to me this morning? I just took it a bit personally. When I take responsibility upon this, even on the fact that I regularly take things personally, it opens up It opens up because I'm no longer blaming you for doing something wrong. No, I just, Brené Brown, your co-patriot in the US, says so beautifully, the power of what is it again? The power of vulnerability. You see, I was even struggling.
That is a good one, though. You pulled it out.
Exactly. Just show yourselves up. And when you show yourself up and are vulnerable about what is going inside you, what is living inside you, what are your needs, and you take responsibility for them, it gets so much easier for the other party to take it constructively.
I'm glad you brought her up. I'm a big fan of Brené Brown. I listen to everything that she says, and even just that statement or acknowledgement of like, I took this personally, doesn't even necessarily, like, that's just the first step in saying like, this is actually how I feel about our interaction. And just that switch of like, why is this person mad at me or didn't say hi to me or passed me? And like, why did they do that? Instead, it's more of like, I took it personally that this is how our interaction went. And just even that like slight switch opens the door to like acknowledging some type of vulnerability on our end instead of continuously like throwing daggers or looking out to the rest of the world.
To me, it's about responsibility. And it's a conviction I have. I cannot prove it. No scientist can prove it. It's just you believe in it or not. And what do you believe in it? I believe that we as human beings, as powerful women, as powerful men, as everything in between, we are responsible for how to deal with A, what we are feeling. B, we are responsible for meeting our own needs. So from the moment I reach out and I say, hey, ooh, what you did there, I took it personally. I show in my intention, in my intonation, in my body language that I am responsible myself for how I deal with my emotions, including that if I'm longing for recognition from your side and I didn't get it, and I say, well, I missed there some recognition. Look at my body language. I literally put my hands on my chest, showing that it's actually my problem. Because even in our language, we can distinguish between accusing somebody else and taking responsibility on it. If we mention the literal words that people are using, I really have a problem with this. Well, honey, listen to what you just said. You literally said, I have a problem. So if I have a problem with your behavior, then not your behavior is a problem. It's me who has a problem with it. So I must take responsibility over it. And from the moment I put myself in a vulnerable position and I say, you said Freddy to me, huh? And I don't like that. I'm Frederick, not Freddy. Please call me Frederick. It's so sensitive. It's my problem. You know, when I was younger, they always called me Ginger Freddy. And it just relates to that moment. So please, if you can, call me Frederick. That would be awesome. I didn't accuse you. I can say the exact same words. Rachel, you called me Freddy. Listen, it's very sensitive to me, you know. They really treated me not very nice when I was a young boy. They always called me Ginger Freddy. So please, can you take into account calling me Frederick, please? The almost same words, with an opposite intention. Now I really think that you are responsible. No, I'm responsible. And you know what happens if you take your own life into your own hands? Something terrible. No one else to blame.
Can I ask you something? Because the whole time you're describing that, everyone's nodding their head. We know that this is prevalent and we know that we all have tendencies towards this. But why is it, maybe there's no answer for this, but in your opinion, why is it easier to relinquish our power and give it away rather than to take responsibility? Why does it feel easier to say, I can't blame myself on that. I want to blame someone else.
Because it's easy. Because I haven't to do anything. I don't have to think about myself. I don't have to think about the problem solution. I don't have to think about the possible solution. I can just blame you and put myself in a kind of victim position, like, you know, I'm harmed by what you did, and it's not fair, and it's not nice, and it's your fault. And if we can play the child, because this is our inner child who feels a victim of everybody, about society, about the people who live with us together, about our a victim of our children, our boss, of traffic, of everything, it's easy. I don't have to do anything. I don't have to take responsibility. I don't have to open up, work on myself, question myself. So from the moment I take responsibility, I always say it in trainings and coachings, life will be harder on the short term, or to make a link between the mental aspects that we are talking about and your core business, doing exercises. All the women following this podcast, they know it. From the first time they do some belly muscle exercises, oh my God, it's so hard. It's easier to sit in your couch and to watch TV. It's easier. You don't have to do less. You have to do less effort. But if you remain every day in your couch, Kelty, what will happen? Will you get that nice muscles in your belly?
No.
So on the short term, it's harder. On the long term, it's way nicer because you're less vulnerable for taking things personally.
Well, I can assure you that the people that listen to this podcast are ones that are into the harder road, and they willingly take it because they know that's the road of self-improvement. And so I think that you are going to really make a big difference to today's listeners to give them some steps to really put this into place. Your TED Talk has amassed 17 million views. First of all, it is one of the top 50 all time globally. I mean, these are very impressive things. And in your TED Talk, you speak about becoming we call it soccer in the United States, but you became a football referee as a way to research taking things not as personally, because we know, and I don't know how it is in Europe, but Americans are they're very hard on their referees. Did you do this because you were struggling with this in your own life? Were you struggling with taking things too personally?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I still do. Yesterday I had a match and I still did take it really personally. It was a weird thing going on. First of all, I felt it 1 minute ago and I want to say it right now. You say these listeners of these podcasts are used to do the hard work. Let me at least take a couple of seconds to reward all the efforts that people who are listening already did in their entire life, to not accuse others, to take responsibility, to develop themselves. Wow, girls. Wow. A big applause from Europe, because you did it wonderful. And even when sometimes you feel like, oh no, my life is a mess and I'm not able, you're more conscious, more aware than, let's say, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago. So yeah. I love to say this. Please put your focus on your growth. It's so important. And let me in this women's platform put a marvelous word joke. It's actually the penis principle. You know the penis principle?
I don't.
Everything you give attention to grows.
Ah, of course it does. And
if you give attention to your personal growth, well, of course, that you will get stronger and stronger. And so this is actually what I did as a referee, as a coach, actually. I was teaching so many people by giving keynote speeches and by giving trainings and coachings how not to take things personally. And at the same time, I was very much struggling with it myself. If a coachee, if an attendee was not paying attention and they were, continue, no worries. They were on their smartphone. I was like, am I not interesting enough or what? And even I was reacting in a very professional way, like, if there's a problem, just tell me. But you could feel from the external side that on the inside, I was boiling on the inside. And so I said, Frederick, isn't it not time to train yourself? And because I'm not really good in any ball sports, I am good in running. So I said, maybe if I love football, if I love soccer, to use the American word, why do I not become a football referee? Because does a referee get a lot of positive feedback? No, he scolded all the time. Are you blind? You're a loser. And I really wanted, in a very strict framework of a match of 90 minutes, learn my brain to not taking things personally by applying the techniques that I was training and teaching to all the people in my trainings, in my coachings. And so the tip is, for everyone who wants to train it, the trick is to know it upfront that things will happen that you will not like. For example, you visit your mother. Imagine you have a very nice mother, but she only gives you that specific remarks. Did you gain some weight? I think you did. Yeah, you should take into account your weight, honey. And you know she will say something about it. If you know that she will say something about it, you are prepared. And if you're prepared, you can tell your brain, listen, I'm going to meet my mom. I know I felt already the atmosphere on the phone when I called her 5 minutes ago that she's in a nasty modus. She will maybe say things that I will not like. If she will do that, I decide to focus on her needs, not on my hurted feelings. And that's why and how I trained my brain to become less and less vulnerable for taking things personally. And even when I know it, it still happens. But it's easier for myself to correct myself. Yesterday, I gave twice a double yellow card. So it means red card means you're out. Of course, nobody says, oh yeah, referee, thank you so much and see you have a nice evening. They like, wah, 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 and like this very theatrically protesting against my decisions. And if at that moment I cannot control myself because I'm in my autonomous nerve system, in my amygdala, the amygdala, how would you say that in
American you're saying English? Correct. Yes.
The amygdala. Mm-hmm. We are in our reptile brain. There's only three possible reactions. Or we freeze, or we run away. We can look everywhere apart from you, because you are my emotional trigger. Or I just start and fight. Hey, you will calm down, will you? In none of those three situations, I'm able to no longer taking things personally. Only when I relax myself and I have trained my brain, listen, this is a moment, I'm in my amygdala, calm down, shut up, don't say anything, don't say anything. Breathe, okay, I feel hurt, okay, it's okay, I can manage this. Yeah, I see it. The player is really, really very frustrated. He's putting his anger on me. I will not take it personally. That's okay, I can manage. And so you are better managed than when you're not prepared. Although you can never always fix it forever, for always. It will always be a difficulty. As you said, Rachel, in the beginning, well, everyone recognizes this. And it's not a 100% fixable problem. It will always, in a way, be hard. Always, in a way.
No, I think that's a great point and acknowledgement that even you're an expert and even still, you struggle with this sometimes, where like yesterday I started to take something personally and this is how I address that. And I think that so many times when it comes to growth and self-improvement, people think that there's this end, there's this, you've reached this point where you've just grown enough, or you know, you no longer take things personally. And it's really important to understand that there is no, unless you're dead, that's not the end. We're constantly correcting ourselves and figuring out how we can become a little bit more resilient to some of these things. How can we train those muscles to take things less personally? Or how can we prepare a little bit better for that conversation, maybe with your mother, where you know is going to be triggering? We have people that are going to continue to be in our lives that do trigger us, that bring out some things in ourselves where we're like, I wish I wouldn't respond that way. You know, like, and the more that we can practice some resilience, like you said, about like preparing ahead of time, the better equipped we are for those conversations.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a nice comparison between training the muscles of our body to become more powerful, more resilient in pushing up a certain weight. Well, The same goes for our brain. It is in a way a muscle that we can train for new behavior. And there the intention is the most important thing. I no longer want to take things personally because I want to become more free. And so the end result, even when I know that sometimes I will fail, I'm learning to become more free and less dependent on how other people treat me.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad that you brought up the example of on the phone too, because I've recently been struggling with this with just some people that I'm around, or like specifically my partner. I'm like, why are you on your phone? Am I not saying anything interesting? And that's immediately me bringing it back to me about being like, oh, what? My feelings are hurt. Am I not saying anything that's interesting enough? Or like, and it, you know what I mean? And it just, the ego takes over where you sometimes wish it wouldn't. So what are some tips, I guess, during those moments? Is it more of just like, take a step back and take a breath and realize that like not everything's about me?
Yeah. And you mentioned the big, big words, the big, big ego. Exactly. The ego doesn't want to be hurt. The ego does not want to be criticized. The ego wants to be valued. You should take my needs into account. And so the moment you put the ego, or the ego is put on the behind the steering wheel, you actually lost. You will go and derive yourself in the valley, because yeah, you put the responsibility again on the other person. From the moment you tell the other person and yourself, oh God, I'm in my ego, it is the way to step out of the ego. Because then you admit it, that actually ego, when you're in your ego, it is because you feel not confident, strong, and loved. You're lacking self-confidence at that moment, because things happen that disbalance you. And instead of saying, ooh, I'm disbalanced, I really thought I had a nice story, and you're on your phone, ah, it's not nice. Okay, yeah, maybe my story is not that interesting for you. I mourn about it because I really hoped you would like my story. But okay, how is it for you when I tell you this, that I feel a bit frustrated and angry that you're not listening to me? And maybe he makes it even worse by saying, oh, honey, you really always have to complain so hard. I'm just taking a moment for myself. I don't know. Hopefully you have reached that point where instead of taking that personally again, you can do the opposite. Quiz for you, Rachel and Kelty, what would be the opposite?
Well, I can imagine that in that case, I would want to talk about only how it made me feel and not about anything they were doing.
Kelty, what would be your answer?
I don't know. Oh, can you ask one more time?
Okay, the following step of the conversation, you're telling in a very enthusiastic way your story. Your partner, your boyfriend, I assume, he's on his phone, and you told him, come on, I'm telling you something like this, and I hoped to translate it from your ego language to your vulnerable language, like, hey, and he answering at that moment, oh yeah, honey, come on, don't make a drama out of it. I was just on my phone for a half minute. Jesus Christ, is everything really so sensitive with you? What would be the next step instead of taking it personally? What would be, let's say, the best, the most connecting reaction? And you saw me doubting, Rachel, on your reaction, like, yeah, you could, instead of focusing on your feelings, you could reach out to him. What could you do with it when you reach out and you think about their needs?
Yeah. Well, I kind of just wonder if maybe that would be an opportunity to ask, like, what's going on your phone? Is there something like that's really important? Or if you needed a moment for yourself, like, why? What is that? And maybe just kind of wondering, like, in a curious way of like, what is it that he's looking for? Like, what need is he trying to get met right now that is not happening within our conversation?
Exactly. Let me help you. I would say the best answer would be, or the most connecting way would be, to give the other person the biggest and the most beautiful gift in communication is empathy. Giving the other person empathy by, after you have listened to what he said, translating their judgments into unmet needs and as a signal to the unmet needs, the feelings. And empathizing in that case would mean for me telling, after he said, oh, I was just on my phone for 2 minutes. Is it really so sensitive always with you? Jesus Christ. Darling, do you think I'm exaggerating? Do you just want me to understand that you are just for one half a minute not listening? And would you like me to be a bit more flexible and not taking it personally and making a drama out of it? Would you just like me to say, oh, sorry, honey, continue on your phone? Is this actually what you want? So by putting it in a phrase, sometimes in a training, I say people misunderstand the concept of empathy. They translate it into fast food empathy. And fast food empathy is to say, I see. Or, I understand. I understand. What do you understand? Instead of just saying in a neutral way, I understand, or I see, which always sounds the same, say what you think you understand. Are you feeling, and then you fill in the feeling, because you would like, and then you fill in the need. Okay. Always the same as you. I work my ass off here, and you always comment, it's never good enough for you. It's never good enough for you. Instead of saying, no, that's not true, and starting to defend yourself out of taking it personally, you can better, in my opinion, reach out by giving empathy. Does it frustrate you that I only give negative feedback? And would you like me to be a bit more positive? Would you like me to give a bit more comments on all the positive things you do? And you only gave empathy in the right way if the reaction of the other person looks something like this. Yes. When the other one acknowledges and says, yes, that's true. Because if the empathy was not correct or complete, they will add what they missed you saying. Yeah, because you're always there to comment me on my mistakes, but you never take time to also thank me for the things I did well. I did do well. So they will always add something.
Those are two very different conversations. The way those end imagine, I'm just like thinking of the amount of doors that open if the conversation goes that way versus the amount of doors that close when it goes the other way. It's just one of the things that you said that I think really struck me about interacting with people and where your ego comes in is, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? And that like made me stop, full stop, because I am a person who has a tendency to like to be right. And that shows in my interactions with other people. And I sometimes am of the understanding that being right will make me happy. Can you talk about why those are two different things?
First, again, it happened again, Rachel, and I really want to reward you and thank you and give you this compliment. How amazingly connecting it is when you imagine we have a fight, a quarrel, a discussion, and you say, hey, I really want to be right. And I'm a person who really easily wants to be right. But I feel that this does not really help further our conversation. How do you say that? Disarming, do you say that as a word? How disarming this is. It's the ego is gone because you put it literally on the table. And because if you want to be right, it means that the other one is wrong. And so, again, to the beginning of the conversation, everyone has the need to be valued, to be seen, to be understood. If I feel that you as a consequence, because you want to be right, that I am not right. Well, and I'm having a low self-esteem and I don't manage to be fulfilled in my low self-esteem by your reaction. On the contrary, you want to be right. Well, my autonomic nervous system is in danger. And so it will or collapse, or it will freeze, or it will run away. And so to no longer taking things personally, and to check whether you want to be happy by building up connection with the other person, you do it not, of course, not only for yourself, you do it for the good of the others as well. And because you will do something in the conversation for the other person, that will make you valuable, not happy in the terms of, okay, what does mean happy? I'm not joyful. Joyful is about instant happiness. I got a like on my Facebook. This makes me joyful. It's not happy. Happy, I mean, it's happy is to me joyfulness or joy on the long term. It's sustainable joy. And in happiness, there is not only enjoyment, receiving. Think about enjoyment. It's always about receiving a good compliment, a good glass of wine, a massage, a good walk in nature. It's about enjoying. It's about getting something. Putting your ego aside, listening to the other person, opening yourself to the other person, and adding value is not about getting, but about giving. So if I give something, if I literally add value to the situation and in a bigger scale to the rest of the world, of course I will become a more valuable and so thus a more sustainable, joyful, happy person. And this is what is behind the very nice quote of, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? It doesn't say, do you want to be right or do you want to be joyful? It's really about, can you put your ego aside on the short term to become more valuable on the mid-long term and to become more happy on the long term? I think if everyone believed this, and it's very dangerous for all the listeners' ego, because their ego say, I don't like that. I want to be right. So if we can embrace that struggle that sometimes we want to be valued, but instead of being valued by other persons, feeling valuable by adding value to other people's life, that would be amazing. That would be tremendously different.
Oh, it's me. We're interrupting this podcast to tell you about the coolest leggings that have ever been on the planet ever. And if you are going to try to crush this new year, you need them. Why are you laughing?
You sounded like that kid. Have you ever had a dream where... Have you ever tried the best leggings and then they are sweatproof?
No, it's so true. Sweatproof, squatproof. They are so freaking comfortable and they have pockets. If you're listening to this podcast and you're not currently wearing our leggings, I gotta tell you, you are missing the boat, sis.
You're missing the boat. And the thing is, most people don't know as they start to get new leggings that not all leggings are created equal. Ooh. And you don't know that your leggings are see-through until you've been wearing them for a month at the gym and someone gets up the courage to tell you that they've been seeing through. Our leggings never see-through, completely squat-proof, sweat-proof, and they stay up while you're working out. So grab a pair for this new year at constantlyvariedgear.com. That's an incredible switch too. Like, because it's not that we are giving up the value, we're reframing it, right? So like sometimes you know, you can feel valuable because you're right, because you've contributed something that like, oh, well, I was right about this thing that made us valuable in a partnership. Like I was right about that investment. So that made me more valuable, but instead being valuable to the other person in their life is like a way bigger win. That feels like such a, you know, allowing them to be fully themselves and vulnerable and to be able to open up those doors in conversation so that it just opens up so much more. Can you, I guess, thinking about, you know, putting the ego on the backseat and what our listeners do, or can do to kind of take steps towards that. Can you explain some simple steps we can take towards getting our ego in control and essentially becoming happier?
Yes. Again, the words responsibility will fall. It's about taking responsibility for what you feel and what you need. Let's start by the needs. We all have the needs. And that's the weird thing about needs. Huh? We all need recognition. We all need confirmation. Let me give a very clear example. My mouth is really sunlighted very well now by the Belgian Europe sun here. I'm doubting already more than 5 minutes. Will I say anything about it or not? Well, what I do right now is feeling, when I don't look as lit as you beautiful women are at the moment, and I'm already older than you are, and I don't have that young, amazing body any longer. Will I feel liked enough? Will they find my message in my poor English good enough? Here I'm taking responsibility myself. It's not fixable. Or I stand up and I close the curtains to have less sunlight, or I just bring it on the table. And I think everyone will say, yeah, now it's okay. Listen, the sun, or indeed close the curtains or whatever. It's about taking responsibility over meeting your needs yourself. Taking responsibility over meeting your needs doesn't necessarily mean that I always have to do it my own. I could ask someone, please, can you close the curtains for me? There is no one. I can nobody ask, but I could ask it. I can also, when, for example, I had a kind of a conflict with somebody and I missed some understanding from that person, because they only talked about their point of view, I could say, Kelty, I want to come back to the conversation of we had, let's say, half an hour ago. I come back because I really miss that you listened to me. Can you please, could you understand how frustrating it was when I could not say anything and I just, the entire conversation, listened to what you said? Can you understand that? So I can reach out to the other person by naming my need. And again, the more in my way of speaking, my intention, I don't put a blame on you. I just express my unmet need and I take responsibility over it by asking you whether you can take into account my needs. But by asking is something entirely different than by demanding it. Next time, I will also not listen to you. Is this what you want? Then you will maybe feel how it was for me when you were not listening. Well, it's either or. You can either, you will punish the other person. You don't do what I want you to do, so I punish you by not saying anything. A problem. There is no problem. No problem at all. No problem at all. You see, I'm hurting you here because I try to punish you for the things that you did wrong. Or I punish you on the one hand, or I forgive you. I give love and I reach out by taking responsibility myself about what I feel and what I need. And so, to answer your question, how can we learn to make our ego as small as possible by taking as much as responsibility over our needs ourselves? So this means, and it will happen all day, that our needs are not being fulfilled. Instead of blaming someone that they are not fulfilled, just say, what can I do in order now to live with that unpleasant moment where my needs are not fulfilled? Because it's not always fixable. When I'm in a meeting with 20 people nagging about things that really bother me, do not interest me, and I'm thinking, why the hell must I attend this meeting? And I don't feel confident enough to say, sorry guys, but I think I will do other things, because they just expect me to obey and be here. I can always take responsibility over my needs by saying, okay, I have the need now to be involved, but at the same time, I have also the need for safety and security by not opening up my mouth. You know what, Frederick? You can live with it. You can manage this situation by indeed swallowing your pride and just knowing that in half an hour, this meeting will be over and then life can continue by doing, oh, you know what? As a reward for bearing this difficult meeting, I will eat a nice energy bar, the best one with the nuts and with the caramel, salted caramel. Yeah, this is a reward for myself. Again, here I take responsibility and I put it in a kind of funny way to make it bearable and livable for myself. So the more you take control over meeting your needs yourself, I miss recognition, I can play victim, or I can reach out and tell, hey, Rachel, can you say something positive about what I propose here? Because I would love to hear from you. This is, to me, mature behavior. Or on best days, I can pat on my shoulder and say, wow, that was nice. That was nicely written. I'm so proud.
I have a vision of us now as just walking around all just big balls of needs. You're a ball of needs. You're a ball of needs. I'm a ball of needs. And thinking about people in this way, I think you put it best, I think disarms them a lot, because rather than thinking about people as walking around sort of looking to attack you or looking to wrong you, or if you look at them as just big balls of needs, it makes them so much more understandable. I wanted to ask you, do you think when we have an interaction with someone where we take something personally, do you think it's more about them or it's more about us?
It's, of course, about both of us. When I take something personally, it means that my need for safety, security is not being met. And of course, it also tells something about what the other person does. So the best way is to no longer taking it personally, and so to meet my need for recognition again, having a method by putting the focus on their needs. And I want to come back on what you said, that people are a bunch of balls with needs. I would like to answer with a quote. I'm afraid it's not, I would not say the quote literally, but as I understand, it's from the Swiss-British philosopher Alain de Botton, who has the School of Life. Watch all his clips on YouTube. It's the best. It's really very, very high level. And he says, hateful behavior is rarely only what it seems. Those who hurt us are themselves in pain. And so the appropriate response is hence never cynicism nor aggression, but at the rare moments one can manage it, always love. Think about someone who lashes out at you. Ah, there you are. I was waiting for you for half an hour. Why do they lash out? Because they feel disbalanced. What do they need? A blame? Hey, I had a full day myself. Calm down, will you? Or, sorry, honey, I see that you're a bit angry, that you're frustrated, that you're upset with me coming late. Or love at that moment could be just not saying anything and let the other person just having their moment boiling on the inside, because you know from your experience that whatever you will say, they will take it even more personally. So love could be at that moment just saying nothing. Yeah. The sun is really playing a game with me here.
I mean, it's totally fine and looks great. It's just shining a light on you.
Thank you for confirming me. I'm however feeling, but that's okay. That's okay. It's my
ego. I loved the point you made, especially when people tend to lash out at us and sometimes they hit a nerve that invokes your own insecurity, right? Like say something and it like hits a nerve for you and then you lash back out at them instead of holding space for that for a second and saying like, there's something going on with them that they feel the need to lash out at other people around them. And that really doesn't have like relinquishing that, taking that personally is really empowering because it doesn't have to hit all of your nerves. It doesn't have to hit some of your insecurities. It can just be met with, wow, are you really frustrated today? Or what's going on that's causing?
You know who understands that really well? I think mothers of young children. Mm-hmm. Because with young children, we don't do this. If a young kid is having a tantrum, we're not like, is it me?
You hate me.
Is it my hair? Like we just immediately go to, must be hungry, must be tired. We can put it, we can bucket it into like pretty much three categories with toddlers: understimulated, hungry, or tired. That's it. That's only three things they ever are. And all of their behaviors go back to one of these three things. And we don't take it personally. We just bucket it and go, all right, you need a snack. All right, you need a nap. All right, you need to get off that tablet. So it's weird that we can understand that with young children, but then we can't, then we get rid of that for adults. It's not automatically like, are you hungry?
It's wonderful what you say, and I think I'm not a scientist, but it must be inhibited in our system. It's our autonomous nerve system. And therefore, I really believe, but I'm not a scientist again, I really believe that that is a reason why women have more generally seen empathy skills that are better developed than men. I think that's true. There are, of course, men who have way more empathy skills than women, but generally seen, on average, I think women are better because they are kind of biologically hardwired to do that by taking care of the needs of the children. The love, the bonding, the oxytocin that is between mother and child make it that the brain do not say, oh, you throw yourself on the floor kicking and screaming that you hate me. Hey, did you know that I woke up during night for you? We will not do something like that. Well, maybe sometimes it's maybe the fifth time they do it. But first reaction is indeed to roll your eyes and say, they're hungry. They are understimulated. They want something. They're thirsty. They want to be cuddled, to be loved. We do that.
They don't actually think I'm the worst parent ever. They don't actually want a new mom.
Exactly. If literally also thoughts do matter. If I on the pitch say that player has not the right to call me what he called me, or I think that player only scolds me because he has the need to win the game and to get to be right, that two thoughts are literally opposite thoughts. The one will frustrate me, the other one will soothe me down, will calm me down. And so literally choose your thoughts. Of course, therefore, you need awareness, self-consciousness to monitor. Oh, I'm stressing. I'm making a drama because I'm thinking in a specific way. If I want to be less frustrated, I must choose other thoughts. It are my thoughts that lead to my emotions.
I remember you said in your TED Talk, you gave some stats about the amount of thoughts we have in a day, which I think you said was like 50,000. Is that right? It's a lot of thoughts. It's noisy in there, very noisy. And they're disproportionately negative thoughts, are they not?
They are. And yeah, that's because even when society has evolved, our brain did not evolve as much as society. What do I mean by that? Our brain still believes that we are, let's say, thousands, I would even say million years ago, that we were not safe. And so the human beings are not hardwired to become happy. Human beings are programmed to survive. And because we have to be on our guard, is there no victim laying there, no leopard or enemies taking control over our lives or coming to pick our possessions? We had to be on our guard. You could be better once too much on your guard than once too little, because then you are eaten or killed. And so this is why we are more problem-oriented. The advantages, and this makes us as a human species unique, that we are the only ones here on Earth who can monitor our thoughts. We can say, I'm aware of the fact that I'm rather problem-oriented thinking. And if I'm thinking problem-oriented, yeah, then I might feel stressed as well. One of the things I do is I help people to improve their public speaking skills. Again, a very nice topic because apparently, an American research, the National Institute of Mental Health in the United States, they researched 1,000 of people. And there are more people afraid to speak in front of a group than there are people who declare to be afraid to die. So in a way to speak, they prefer to be in the coffin during a funeral than rather to be in front of the church to say something about the person who's in a coffin. And that is also related because we feel like judged. If I'm in front of a group and I think, oh gosh, everybody is looking at me, they're judging me, oh, they're criticizing me, my body language is not, oh, it's close, I'm in danger. Then you will feel less confident than when you think, okay, let me look at Kelty. Hi, Kelty.
Hi.
Hi. Hello there, Rachel. Okay, I see that you were on your phone. Can I still have 2 minutes your attention? I'm explaining some facts and figures here behind me on the screen. Is that okay? If I think she's on her phone because it's normal, she had all day back-to-back meetings and she just wants to escape, my figures maybe do not really interest her, then again, you will not take it personally. If I invite you by listen to me and I see your positive intention, then there will be a complete other outcome than when I really think, oh no, I'm not a good speaker. You see, she's judging me, she's not interested, or she's even doing it on purpose. Also such a nightmare thought.
I love reminding myself constantly that it's not about me. It's not about you, Rachel. Everything's not about you. Every expression on someone's face isn't about you.
But at the same time, it's very good that you do that. And at the same time, pay attention to not only do that, because there you're correcting yourself. And what I would want to advise there is to add also, like you finish your meal with a lot of salt and pepper, is to finish your state there to say, it's not about you, Rachel, it's not about you. And at the same time, it's not nice that this happens because, yeah, I missed some love and safety here. And yeah, that's also a bit understandable that I reacted in this manner.
Yeah, because it's not sustainable to consistently dismiss something exactly. That you are feeling. If you are feeling hurt or not hurt or, exactly. You know, any of those things, it's not sustainable to just dismiss that with it not being about you. But what is it that you are looking for?
All right, I'll work on that, guys. I'll work on that second part. Frederick, I want to close with just one more question that I actually just thought of. We didn't have it written down or anything. I just thought of it now because it's like another level of taking things personally when we are connecting so much on social media and text message and things that we can't see each other's faces or things that we feel like have some anonymity. Is that the word? A lot of our interactions now are not face to face. And when it comes to adding this into the not taking things personally, what about seeing hateful stuff on your social media, criticisms from people who don't know you? What about reading a text message and it doesn't have a smiley face emoji? So are you mad at me? What about that?
I think it even hurts more because we literally do not see the other person. And there is, especially on social media, there is sometimes a truly negative intention. So for example, when you were passing me in a hallway this morning, chances are big that your intention was not negative, that there was a positive intention, closing yourself off or concentrating yourself. But on social media, people do have sometimes tendency to be negative. And even when the other person's intention is negative, it does not mean that you have to allow it or you have to become passive. But if your goal is to no longer taking it personally, then especially at that moment, you can, even when there is a negative intention towards you, see the positive intention for the other person. What does it bring the other person to do what they do? If they scold on you, they put a post on social media with a lot of hate comments on you, it brings them ego, it brings them a feeling of power, being more than you, and it brings them that they can lash out at you and they feel like, haha, valued. Valued. No, not valued. They feel ego. It's an ego trip. This is in their consciousness, and let's admit it, sometimes we are also there. We also heard it, some people, in a negative way, in an ego way. They are at that moment in their ego. And so it's not nice. And so giving yourself in the first place, self-empathy. Self-empathy is the same as you do with other people, only towards yourself. You reformulate all your judgments, your victim, inner voice, into feelings and needs. I feel sad. I feel angry. I want justice here, and it's not right what the other person did. They accuse me for things that I did not do, and it's such a hard work for me to accept that this overcomes me. The chance that after this small self-empathy, the energy, negative energy, is gone is not that high. So it's a normal thing. Sometimes I have to talk to my boyfriend for, let's say, one day, winding down about what happened to me. And I also learned to less and less feel guilty about that. Some people are very lucky that they can easily put things aside. And this is a true inspiration for other people who are not able to do that. But let's not compare us with those in terms of we also have to be there, because then we become again even more guilty. So giving yourself empathy means, okay, yeah, apparently I have that need. I'm really trying to take responsibility over my needs and my feelings. And even when I try to do that, apparently it only decreased from 100% anger to 95% anger. And maybe, okay, just a little bit less. Okay, now again, an hour later, 90%. It does not, we are living in a society that makes us believe that everything is fixable. And you both said it already. It's not fixable. Your problem that you have in your life will always remain your problem. You can only be more aware. If you have a weak shoulder, your weak shoulder will, for the rest of your life, be your weak shoulder. You can train the brain, you can train the muscles, but when you put too much stress on your shoulder, you get injured there again. So the same goes with things like missing. The question for the listeners could be, can you try and try to examine yourself? Which needs, it's maybe homework for all of you, which need in the list of needs you can find on the internet, list of needs, which needs are under pressure in your life? Which needs, oh man, the sun. Which needs always come back? Which need, if when you look at 20 difficult situations in your life where you had a hard time, which needs were not being fulfilled? And chances are really very high that these needs are rooted in your childhood. Is it security?
That's a really good
Is it clarity?
Question.
Is it taking into account? And so imagine we could say that you're not looking at me and on your phone. I know you don't know you do it. You don't do it on purpose. And I know it's not your problem. But as a child, I was only looked at when I did good things. And now me sharing you this story, I don't see it as a real good thing, but I'm still hoping and longing for that eye contact that I never got as a child. And this is why it is so sensitive to me. That's the only reason. And so I know that you're not looking at me and does not have that same value, but I take it in as this. So please just, I thank you for listening to me, to mention this. Just know that this is sensitive for me.
Well, that's a really powerful way to put that too, and just kind of almost acknowledge and figure out what are, even like what are some of our triggers, because we don't necessarily know what they are in the moment. You just say like, I feel angry about something, about not, you know, not being seen, or I have to be extraordinary. My story has to be extraordinary in order for some acknowledgement. And it's like, how much pressure?
It's true.
It's too much pressure.
It's true. It's true. It's so true. Yeah.
So I think I personally have left with so many actionable things that I feel like I can start putting in place right now to better interact with people. And I hope the same for our listeners, because I think you were so succinct in the ways that we can reframe some of these like knee-jerk reactions that we've done over and over and over, and just stop and notice them That in itself is an actionable tip. And then starting to work on the why, and is it about me? Is it about them? Is it like all of these things? I feel like I have things to really take into my interactions from here. So thank you so much, Frederick. Can you tell our listeners where they can hear more from you?
They could watch on YouTube some clips. They could go on our website. It's imborling.be And they could also always reach out via our website. I come to the United States to give a training about connecting communication, the work of Marsha Rosenberg, nonviolent communication. And I really want to finish by thanking all the listeners for listening. And really, the third time I will do it in this podcast. Yeah, Kelty and Rachel, you are very nice looking. I can say it, I'm gay. Nice looking.
And it means even more then.
Sorry?
It means even more.
Exactly. You're so beautiful. And in terms of radiating self-consciousness and vulnerability to opening, the willingness to open yourself and to question yourself is such a powerful gift to the listeners that can follow your podcasts. And I'm quite sure for all the people surround you. So thank you for being the wonderful secret marriage of femininity, empathy, beauty, and at the same time, some masculine values like not letting yourself doing by other people, coming up for yourself, being assertive. And to me, that was really a very nice moment to talking to you.
Thank you so much.
Well, it's a good thing you're gay, Frederick, because I would have to ask you out after that. That was probably the best compliment I've ever received. My Lord. Oh, God. Okay. So check out Frederick on his channels. You are going to absolutely love his content. And Frederick, thank you so, so much. We would love to have you back.
See you, girls. Bye, everyone.
Thank you so much for listening to the Thick Thighs Save Lives podcast. If you'd like to join our movement, get in our free app, CVG Nation, available in your app store. We have an amazing community of women, coaches to help you with your movements, challenges, and we give away leggings daily in there. Rachel and I are in there every day, so it's a perfect place to get in touch with us. This podcast is made possible by Constantly Varied Gear, so be sure to check out constantlyvariedgear.com. Have an amazing week. Crush your goals.